All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Threads of Time podcast. Tonight, I am joined by the one and only Tino. Tino was nice enough to join us. But before we get to that, I need to give a big shout out to tonight's podcast sponsor, the Big Man of America Committee. The Big Men of America just celebrated their 19th anniversary on the 19th of this month. May 19th, that is. The Big Man of America Committee Chairman, Bill, would like to remind you all that Mustangs, Little Peepees, Tokyo Drift, and Turning 19 are all important, but their new initiative is the TCL Draft Lottery. Their hope is to eventually totally screw up the order in which we draft. That's the Big Man of America Committee. And now, Mustangs, and on with the show. As the years go by, I'm back in the game at 25. Boise's hard to beat, walking on me with his playoff streak, yeah. Electric tape roll, animal print pants out of control. In Cleveland, with Mr. Afro, I play Afrojack, it's time to glow. Yeah, I worked out. Yeah, I worked out. When I walk on the pitch, this is what I see. Everybody drops and is staring at me. I got fashion and a tan, and I ain't afraid to show it, show it, show it, show it. I'm Tino and I know it. I'm Tino and I know it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Threads of Time podcast number, whatever number it is. I am joined today by the Greek god, not of hits, but of Tino. Tino, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
All right. Yeah, thanks for doing it, man. I think people will be very intrigued when they find out that you're actually willing to come on and just bullshit with me for a while.
I think it'll be fun. I mean, you got a lot of guys in the league, a lot of guys who... have a lot of history, and I have some history with, you know, a while back, a couple of real life years back. But I think it'll be fun, and, you know, most people around CSBFBL know me a little bit, at least, so I think it'll be fun.
They know you by your rep, if nothing else.
Yeah, right? For better or for worse.
Well, you have been around a long time. I was looking back, and I joined in 2004, and you must have been somewhere around that time.
Mm-hmm. I was in August of 2004, I think.
Yeah, so... you had to be like 15 years old at the time.
Yeah, I think I was a sophomore in high school, maybe. So that sounds about right, but it was a long freaking time ago.
So when, I don't know if you listened to the one I did with Rent, but he was talking about how his parents thought he was hanging around a bunch of pedophiles. were your parents feeling the same way?
Well, I don't think they thought you guys were a bunch of pedophiles. They were just really confused about the whole fake fantasy baseball thing. And you know, my friends asked me what I was doing, and I was like, well, it's like fantasy baseball, but they're like, baseball's not in season. So, you know, it was rough trying to explain. I kind of started to explain it like, imagine you're playing Madden, and all the guys have ratings and stuff, and it's like that, but you don't actually play the game. So, like, how much fun is that? But I enjoy it, so I don't know. Not a lot of people got it.
Yeah, it is pretty tough to explain it to people. I remember... when I first met anybody from the league, it was Aztecs, and I met them at a casino because we figured, you know, we'd be in around a lot of people in case either one of us was a killer. And I remember trying to explain it to my girlfriend at the time. She's like, so you're meeting a guy that you know from the internet from a fake and she didn't know what she didn't know what fantasy baseball was, so she just heard fantasy. And so she's like, basically you're on a date with a guy from the internet. And I was like, no,
that's not.
But then when I explained it out loud, I was like, yeah, it's kind of like that, I guess. We're going to a casino, we're gonna hang out for a couple hours, drinks.
Oh, that's funny. I don't know how I would explain a meetup to the girl right now, so we'll don't know if everyone comes to Ohio, maybe we'll do that.
Yeah, what's up with that? For some reason, I thought you were from New York, but you're living in Cleveland.
All right,
What are you slumming?
yeah,
Come on,
not
man.
quite. I was born and raised in New York, lived there basically my whole life until my senior year of college. So I went to college in South Carolina. During my senior year of college, my mom and my stepdad, who I lived with, my stepdad ended up getting a job out in Cleveland. So then when I graduated school, instead of going back home to New York, home kind of became Cleveland. So I came out to Cleveland, got my job
Wow.
here, bought a condo downtown, and now I'm kind of established here. Although I'm looking to move to Charlotte. Actually, I had a job interview there a week ago.
Wow. Yeah, I've been
Yeah.
to Charlotte. I like that city a lot.
Oh, it's a wonderful city.
And but I can't think of when I've been to Cleveland. I want to say I've been there, but I can't think of when it was. Downtown Cleveland, I assume, just like any big city, the downtown is a lot of fun to hang out in.
Oh, it's wonderful. Honestly, I absolutely love the city. If I could like pick up the city and transplant it somewhere warm and not miserable 6 months out of the year, I would never move. But when it's like negative 40 wind chill, that stuff gets you. It's not fun.
It was a brutal winter, man.
Oh, it was out of control.
We had 6 or 7 days where it maintained, not just it reached minus 20, it maintained minus 20 for the entire 24-hour period in Madison. I mean,
Oh,
it
that's
was
absurd. Oh,
horrendous.
okay, yeah, you know full well about what this is going
Yeah, this was the worst winter. It made me want to move to
on.
my girlfriend and I, Kelly, we're talking pretty seriously about moving to Denver.
I've heard great things about Denver.
Yeah, it's a great city. People think that they get a ton of snow, but that's all hype. They don't get shit compared to what Cleveland or Madison gets. It's great.
Well, I think the thing about Denver is that even though it's decently cold and you get your seasons and it's a ton of sun. It's not gray all the time. I mean, here it is fucking gray all the time. Like I love sitting out in the sun, just running around, being outside, but it's always gray. Like, Denver is not like that. Denver, I've heard, is gets more days of sunshine than, Miami or something like that.
Yeah, and they have the mountains there, and it's just a really beautiful area too. But so is Charlotte. I mean, you're getting closer to the ocean, you're further south.
Yeah, and it's not pretty. So Charlotte's pretty inland, but there's a big lake about 20 minutes north of Charlotte, called Lake Norman, and so you can go up to the lake or something. It's a couple, and it is only 3 hours away from the ocean. So if you want to take a drive, you can.
I didn't even realize it was that far.
Yeah, but it's a great city. I have some friends down there. The people are awesome down there. The climate is, unbelievable. I was down there last weekend, and it was, high 70s, low 80s, and sunny all 3 4 days I was down. So,
So did
that
you
kind of sold me.
did you look for the job specifically in that area, or is that just where you happened to get an
No,
interview?
I've been actively trying to move down to Charlotte for about a year now.
You're not moving for a lady, are you?
No, my lady's up here. She's not gonna be happy about
Oh, okay. All right. Good
it.
for you. See, this is what I need more on the podcast. Everybody I talk to is whipped up by women.
Oh no. I mean, she's awesome. She's a great girl, but
Yep.
my goal is to move to Charlotte, so that's what I'm gonna do. And we'll either figure it out or we won't, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
So why'd you pick Charlotte?
So, I went to school in the South and kind of fell in love with the whole Southern thing. And the job I, was able to get was up in Cleveland, where my family was, which was fine. And then one of my good buddies, who is my best friend from high school's college roommate, so I met him through my buddy in high school. We all went on spring break a couple times together in college, and we made a couple of visits down to Charlotte. And I was just like, this city is perfect. It's the perfect size. It's great people, great weather. I kind of just, some people see a girl and, love at first sight. I went down to Charlotte and was like, love at first sight.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. So, and then I won't say what you do for or where you work, but you're in banking basically, right?
Yes. Yeah, I'm in banking.
So, and what is that where you're going to stay? Is that the career path?
Maybe. So I've been exploring some options in banking. I also have an energy company down there is who I interviewed with. And that's where I feel pretty confident that there's something that could work out with that. And I don't actually even know exactly what I would be doing. It's a connection I had through a family friend, and they really enjoyed interviewing with me. They really liked some of the skills I brought to the table, but they don't necessarily have an open position, so they're trying to figure out how to create a position. They're thinking something like an internal consultant, look across their different lines of businesses, get best practices. They run a number of different programs, so basically go out to all the programs, get the best practices from each, implement them, and they have a couple other projects in mind for me. So we'll see if that where that goes. It's definitely a good opportunity though.
Seems like you're kind of sniffing the money there between banking and energy. All you have to do is get entertainment and politics, and you got everything cornered.
Yeah, I'm trying.
But no, seriously, that sounds like you're on a pretty good path, 'cause you're just turning 25 at the end of this month, right?
Yep.
So I mean, you're on a pretty good roll here for
I'm
your
doing
age.
I'm oh I'm I've been very fortunate. My parents have provided me with some great opportunities. So, I haven't squandered them away, I guess, but I owe a lot to a lot of other people than myself.
Yeah, and you went to a good college. That always helps.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that, that is probably helping me in my job search down south too, because it has a good reputation down there, but no one has heard of it outside of like North South Carolina. So it didn't exactly help me when I was graduating and, kind of try to go home where, where my parents were and stuff.
So, I want to talk a little bit more about that, but before I forget to talk about Cleveland a little bit more. We downtown, explain to people that haven't been from Cleveland, what's downtown? Is the stadium downtown, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, that type of stuff?
Yep. So downtown is it's actually pretty small. Not a ton of people live downtown. Most people work downtown and live in the suburbs. I live downtown. So I walk out my back door and I am in my seats at Progressive Field where the Indians play in 4 minutes. So
Very cool.
it's literally a block away. I can see it from my bedroom window. So that's really cool. And the Q where the Cavs play basketball is right next door to that. And the Brown Stadium is 10 minute walk from me.
You are surrounded by sports mediocrity.
I am surrounded by ineptitude. It's incredible. The thing with the Browns games is like I don't go to the games. I just go tailgate and get hammered with a bunch of my rugby buddies and stuff. So we don't even go to the games. There's no you don't want to go and subject yourself to that.
God, it's crazy when you list off the franchises together and you think about the Indians being like the most successful one by just getting to the World Series.
Oh yeah.
It's a pretty painful group.
Yeah, to be honest, I love the Indians. So I was a big Yankees fan when I was growing up.
That's where you got the name,
That's
right?
where I got the Tino from, and I was a huge Yankees fan, and then they let Tino walk and brought in Jason Giambi for some absurd amount of money. I was like, "Fuck you guys, I'm done." They let they just started buying everyone. And they were buying themselves World Series, and it was not fun to root for them anymore. It was like, oh, the Yankees, they're going to be great. I mean, that's not fun. So I kind of stopped following baseball, and that was when I was starting playing high school football, and I got much more into the Giants and the NFL and all that stuff. So I basically stopped watching baseball, rooting for baseball, stopped it completely. And then I moved out here. And tickets to Indians games are like $10. You get in the stadium for $10. They're a decent team. They're fun to watch. It's a great, date night on a Friday night. They got fireworks after the game. Sit, have a couple beers. It's a great experience. And then just from going to all the games for fun, then I started knowing all the guys on the team, rooting for all, and then now I'm a kind of psycho Indians fan.
Who's the best player on their team right now?
That's a good question. I would say Kipnis, probably Jason Kipnis. He's their second baseman. He's a
Yeah.
stud. He's on the DL right now. They got a bunch of good pitchers. They got this one guy, Corey Kluber. He's kind of an unknown guy, but he's a guy that stat heads, guys who like fantasy baseball, are always enamored with because all of his supporting stats are great. And he's had some pretty decent seasons, but they're like waiting for him to turn into the, Verlander or whatever that his peripherals say he will. So there's this website called FanGraphs, and
I'm sure everybody listening's aware of it, yeah.
yeah, so they had a Corey Kluber Society. It was like a kind of a joke post where they would just have people come and watch his games and talk about it. So, you know, I of course had to draft him for my fantasy team. He did pretty good. He set the Indians record for like 8 straight strikeouts a couple starts ago. So I was like, that's not bad.
Nice.
Yeah. Him, Kluber, and a couple other guys. They have some really good players. But no real studs like, you know, Cabrera or anything like that.
For years, I used to, I don't know why, but Travis Fryman was one of my favorite guys playing.
Travis Fryman?
Yeah. Yeah, he was an Indian for a while.
What time period was this?
Oof. Yeah, 5 years ago?
Talking about Hafner?
Hafner.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, Travis Hafner. Who's Fryman? That's somebody too. I don't know.
Maybe.
But yeah, Hafner. Yep.
Or whatever.
Yeah, he probably was. He was on my remake team.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned rugby, and you've played rugby since high school, huh? They had rugby at your high school?
No. I played rugby since my freshman year of college.
Oh, since college. Okay.
Yeah. So went down there. Basically, didn't have too much going on besides school, and I was just bored. I wanted something to do, you know, and I was a northerner coming down south, so there weren't a ton of people who, I'm not going to say I didn't get along with everyone, but there weren't a ton of people who were the kind of same group of guys that I would normally like to hang out with.
Right.
You know, a lot of frat stars, that sort of thing. That's not really my speed. Then one of my buddies on my hall was like, dude, just come out and play rugby. Just give it a shot. And I don't know what the hell was going on, but went out there, started loving it, and then been playing it ever since.
You have that one picture that I love of you just throwing that guy to the ground. And who's taking that picture? Who do you owe that picture to?
Oh, I owe them a debt of gratitude, whoever it was. It was I think it was a sevens or a tens tournament, not last summer, the summer before. We were playing one of our, I don't know, it was maybe Cincinnati or something, but that kid was actually an All-American, and I don't know what he was thinking, but he tried to tackle me up high, and I just tossed him.
Yeah, the picture was taken at the perfect time. I thought maybe it was a video or something, and you just clipped out the perfect moment. But it was like that that poster that everybody had on their wall of Michael Jordan dunking over Patrick Ewing.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, my friends, a bunch of my friends joked I needed to make a poster out of that. I'm like, oh, well, I'm pretty self-absorbed, but not that much. That's too much. I'm not doing that.
You do. You need to make a fat head out of you and of that guy just separately and put it on your wall.
One of my friends actually said that, too. Wow, great minds think alike.
That's funny. Yeah, that rugby is just kind of a badass sport. I mean, did you come away with injuries?
Honestly, from rugby, not really more than bumps and bruises and twisted stuff. But like, no, for 24 years old, I'm an old fucking man. I have had three surgeries, and I'm probably going to, there's more to come, I think. But yeah, most of that is from, I don't kind of know where it comes from. It just like accumulates, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh wow, I'm pretty fucked up now. Well, how did that come? You know, where did that happen? But
so what were the surgeries? I know you just had one on your hip.
Yeah, so I had my knee done like 3 years ago, my shoulder 2, and then my hip a couple months ago.
So what was the knee?
Tore my meniscus. Actually, I know how I did that. That one I did squatting. I had bad form, let my knee kind of cave in, and then, you know, pinched as I was coming up, and good night. I knew it when I did it. I was like, oh, shit.
Did you start crying?
No.
I would have cried like a little bitch. I would have.
No, I honestly, I didn't know what I did. I knew I tweaked my knee. I was like, oh, shit, I did something. Yeah, I felt it. And I was like, oh, you know, it'll be fine. I'll get over it. So I ended up playing, you know, that I did it over the summer. So I ended up playing half a season of rugby on this torn meniscus, and my knee, like, it hurt, and my knee kept swelling up. I looked like I had a fucking golf ball in my knee, and I was like, all right, this is like, there's something going on here. And if, you know, and my therapist was a fucking moron, and she was like, oh, you just have, you know, your IT band is tight. I'm like, are you kidding me? So finally I got the MRI and everything, torn meniscus, doctor went in, snipped it out, and I was playing again like a month later. I got it done in the winter, like between our seasons.
So that other doctor just took a look at it without running any tests and just said you had crybabyitis and then sent you on your way and told you to rub some dirt on it?
So I didn't go to that. It was the sports medicine person at my school.
Oh.
The therapist down there.
Jeez, that's...
Ooh. So she basically didn't know what the fuck she was talking about and made me play on a torn meniscus for a couple months, but it's fine. Got it taken care of. No worse for the wear.
And I'm assuming the shoulder was from lifting as well?
Maybe. It was either from lifting or rugby, one of the two. I don't really know when it happened, but I ended up tearing the labrum and they had to go and repair it, tighten up the capsule. That one was really rough. Getting something repaired is very different than getting something kind of cleaned up.
Yeah.
They have to actually suture it back together and put anchors in and all that shit. That hurt for a long time. Now it's pretty sure it's torn again. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know how I did it. Like, just like last time, no idea how I did it. But I'm benching. I'm like, wow, my shoulder really hurts. Like, they'll give it a couple days. I'll try some other stuff. I'm like, wow, my shoulder still really hurts. So I have no idea how I did that either.
You're bench pressing right now?
No, I can only do dumbbells.
I thought you were like short of bed rest after your hip surgery.
Okay, so the hip surgery wasn't actually. I was doing like push-ups and stuff like 5 days after hip surgery. They're probably not happy about that. But no, so the hip surgery ended up not being as bad as I thought it was going to be. It was better and worse in different ways. They thought there was a torn labrum. You have labrums in your hip and your shoulder, so mine are apparently shit. But they thought it was a torn labrum, and they went in there, and turned out it wasn't. It was just, like, fraying. So I had the hip impingement, which is kind of a bone spur. So they had to shave that down and reshape the bone. Then they cleaned up some of the fraying of the cartilage, and then they, like, actually microfractured the hip because I had arthritis in there, and that kind of promotes healing of cartilage. So they did all those three things, but there was no actual tear of the labrum that needed to be, anchored in place and sewn. So because there was no repair done, just a cleanup, the recovery really wasn't that bad.
Are you fully recovered now?
Kind of. There's a little bit of pinching. It's hard to explain. If you're imagining like a hip stretch, I still don't have full stretching mobility. So I'm working through that. I'm still going to physical therapy and we're trying to get that pinching blockage, whatever it is, worked out because, I am trying to start playing and the seventh season starts in a month, so I don't really have a lot of time.
Wait, you're still playing rugby?
Well, I'm trying to start again. I played through the hip impingement because I could play and then I couldn't walk for a couple days, but I was okay with that. But I couldn't play during – so I could play the seventh season because the way the seventh season works is you have like one practice during the week and it's not really practice. It's just like pickup and then you have a tournament, which is fine. But I couldn't play during the 15th season because it was practice on Tuesday, practice on Thursday, game on Saturday. And after, the Tuesday practice, I couldn't walk for 3 days. So I kind of had to give that up. But I was still playing, the pickup and the sevens and stuff.
You're too old for that shit, man. Time to hang it up.
I know. No, I'm not. I'm not hanging them up. Everyone tells me to, but I have too much fun with it.
So I don't know anything about rugby. I assume the sevens and the tens is 7-on-7 type thing.
So it's same. It's, however many number of people are on the field, sevens, tens, and 15s. 15s is the kind of official game that's played worldwide. And then there's tournaments, all over the place that are sevens and tens. But it's the same size field. So,
God, that's a lot of running, 7-on-7.
Oh, yeah. That's why I love it, though, because there's a lot more open space to work with. Yeah. And it's a much shorter game. So 15s are 80 minutes long, two 40-minute halves. And it's just fucking brutal. Sevens are only 7-minute halves. So it's a much quicker, much more fast-paced game. It's so much fun to play.
Yeah, a lot more wide open, I assume. So it's a little more lawless on the back end, too.
I wouldn't say lawless, but there's a lot more space to work with. So if you get like a with 15s, it's a real pain in the ass because, you break through one guy, there's like three other guys there to stop you. With sevens, you get through the guy who's supposed to tackle you. There's maybe one other guy who has a chance at you. Otherwise, you're out the gate.
Yeah, and he's standing there with like a red cape with a bull running at him, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
sometimes. I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah, that's something, man. I'd have to check that out. We don't, for some reason, rugby really isn't that popular everywhere west of where you're at.
I know it's well.
Kind of like lacrosse isn't that big either.
Lacrosse is huge in the Northeast. Rugby is huge, in colleges and stuff, and also in the West Coast and California and stuff. A lot of those schools have great, like UCLA, some of those others down there have really great teams. That's where a lot of the semi-pro guys and stuff come from.
Have you suffered any concussions playing rugby?
I'm sure I have.
Yeah.
I know of. Oh yeah, I was knocked unconscious my senior year. Went and some guy gave me a bad fucking pass over my head, so I had to like look up to get it, and the guy nailed me right under my chin.
Jeez.
I honestly don't even remember the hit. I just remember waking up on the sideline and watching the game being played and like, why the fuck aren't I out there? What's going on? And that was that.
Yeah.
That was the only concussion that I can really remember from rugby. I have a couple others from doing stupid stuff, but
When I hear people talk about concussions in football, I always know that they're an idiot when they say something stupid like, well, if they just took off the face mask, it went, or if it's the helmets leading with the helmet that's causing the problem. I'm like, motherfucker, it is a head. It is just not
well,
supposed to do that. I mean, you're going to get concussions if you're playing at that speed.
yes. Okay. Well, yes and no. Because what they're saying is that it's not necessarily the concussions that are causing all the brain damage, but it's the slower, gradual buildup of just, the helmet's knocking, the helmet's knocking, the helmet's knocking, that is causing it. I truly think if you put everyone in the scrum caps that rugby people use and got rid of the plastic, sorry, the plastic shoulder pads and all that stuff, and made it more of a fabric-y armor sort of thing that wasn't, because when you play rugby, you do not lead with your head because you will fuck yourself up.
Sure.
So it's like built into the game that you're not gonna, yes, there will be some hits, and they are illegal, by the way, when you launch yourself at someone. So that's one reason that you don't see it as much. And the other thing is, if you go head to head in rugby, you're an idiot. You're gonna concuss yourself. It's not the same type of tackle. Tackles in rugby are much more about like basically bringing the guy down and putting yourself in the best position to try to steal the ball because he's got to release it when he hits the ground. You don't go for the big hit that you go for in football because that doesn't make sense. You're gonna hurt yourself, and you're not gonna get the advantage that you would if you positioned yourself to steal the ball. So it's a very different game. But I do think that having a weapon on your head that's really easy to hit someone with does not help the whole concussion thing.
Yeah, I completely understand the point. I guess my point is, and I do definitely agree with you that it's the slow build up over time because you've seen that happen with boxers for years that have never gotten knocked out that still suffer brain damage. But I guess my point was with the NFL at the speeds that they play, you wear a helmet on a bicycle in case you fall off going 5 miles an hour, and these professional athletes are running at each other at 30 miles an hour, and you just getting thrown to the ground and your neck whipping around and your head bouncing off the turf, you're going to get concussed.
I agree. I don't think there's a way to eliminate concussions from the game.
I agree.
There's you gotta these guys, they make a ton of money. Their careers are short. They know what, but I feel like they know what they're getting themselves into. No one. They're kidding themselves if they think they're playing a safe game. So they do know what they're getting themselves into, and that doesn't mean that, oh, it's a good thing they're getting concussions, but everyone takes risks every day, and they know what the risks that they're taking.
Yeah, I mean they're taking huge risks to be millionaires. I think if any of us had the skill to play in the NFL, we'd all do it too. I mean, so yeah, it's tough. It's a two-sided argument for sure. So I have proof that you've had some head injuries.
Oh God! And, what is that?
And that's because when I was looking you up, I noticed that you're a big fan of electronic house music.
I love house music.
So you had to have had some concussions to like that crap.
Are you kidding me?
Tell me, why do you like electronic house music? I'm doing a bad example of electronic.
Oh, no. I mean, listen, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but there, I mean, and I don't know what sort of stuff you're listening to. If you're listening to like dubstep and shit like that, that's just loud noise.
That's all I know.
Okay. That is awful. I hate that. That is horrible. You know, I have some friends who are into that and trap and all these kinds of like just awful. I don't know how to explain it. It's just loud noise. It's just shit. It doesn't sound good. I like, you know, uplifting, melodic, you know, I like house, trance, progressive, that sort of stuff. I like stuff that just sounds good and makes you feel good and is uplifting. I don't like that crazy shit. No, that's all terrible.
When you listen to it, are you on ecstasy?
Not like when I'm sitting at my computer. If I go to a show, meet my friend Molly or something like that. Yeah.
See, I've never done that. Is it the greatest thing ever? Like
people describe it. If you get good stuff, it's the greatest thing ever. I've only done it a handful of times. I'm not like some degenerate, but if it's good, it's really good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've looked into MDMA or ecstasy quite a bit because, yeah, I mean, they're using it to treat like soldiers with PTSD. I mean, it's a big thing now, and it can. I would stop short of saying cure, but it can greatly help people with a single dose.
Absolutely. I've done a lot of research on it. I don't do things that I don't know, with the caveat of, then again, you'd never know what you're actually getting. But MDMA is really relatively safe. It's relatively, but you know, if you look at any of the charts of like, risk for dependence and risk for death, I mean, it's below alcohol and tobacco I mean, it's really safe compared to some of these legal things. It's just, you never know what you're getting because you can't really know unless you but even if you trust who you're getting it from, well, who did they get it from, and so you don't know. And you really, it's not something that's addicting. I mean, it's fun, but you got to understand the risks associated with it, and you know, hydrate and don't do it more than once every couple months, if that, because that's how long it takes for your serotonin to reuptake and replenish. So, I mean, I've done a lot of research in it because I'm not stupid and I don't want to kill myself. But when I go to shows, I might participate. It's fun.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I kind of use a couple hurdles on whether or not, number one, something's addictive. Then number two, if something's dangerous, and so on. And my hurdle for if something's addictive is if you've ever seen a homeless person with a sign standing at a corner saying they need money, because that's something you're addicted to. That's meth. That's heroin. That's alcohol. Those are the people that are out there. You don't see anybody out there saying, man, I lost my job because of MDMA, because of ecstasy.
Need money for Molly.
Yeah, that doesn't ever happen. Now, no. Is it dangerous? Well, there you get into a little bit sketchy of an area, because is MDMA dangerous? Not that much. I mean, as long as it's dosed correctly and it comes from a reputable area. Where it does become dangerous is you're buying it from some scuzzball outside a club. Too. Yeah, and who knows who made it, where it came from, what they.
I would never buy from a scuzzball outside a club. But
yeah.
But you don't know who the people who you do trust. You don't even know where they're getting it from. So it doesn't matter. You can't, unless someone along the line who you trust is actively testing it. You don't know what you're getting.
Yeah, that's why people have to be careful with LSD, because you just, it's impossible to dose correctly. So if you get to the hot point of that paper, you're in you're in trouble. You know, that's why people should just focus on, if they're going to do something like that, just do mushrooms, because you know exactly what you're getting. You can dose it yourself.
That's funny. My barber was telling me about some story about how his friend took LSD and I don't know what he did. He like cut himself and he got all hurt and had to go to the hospital. I don't know, but I'm not basically, moral of the barber story was don't take LSD. So like, fine.
Yes.
I don't remember the story, but it was some long involved thing that involved, you know, don't do LSD.
You hit on something. I was going to talk to you a little bit about nutrition, because we've talked about it on the boards and talked to you about Red's take on nutrition, that type of thing. But sure. You had talked, as mentioned, your serotonin uptake. And so when it comes to your nutrition, do you focus on things that are cognitive enhancers or just physical?
Mostly just physical. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know how much I buy into the whole cognitive enhancers and stuff. If you eat a balanced diet that you know, you get your greens and all that crap in there, and you're not just eating Pop-Tarts all day, you'll get all the vitamins and minerals and micronutrients that you need to function correctly.
So do you take a multivitamin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you heard that big test that said multivitamins are bullshit?
Yes, I did. But I figure for, you know, whatever it is, $6 a month, you know, $18 for a 3-month supply. I mean, it's why not ensure you're getting all your stuff?
Yeah, I see. I guess I didn't even look at the study, so I can't speak to it. But how could they be? You know, I mean, if at the very least they do nothing, at the very
exactly.
And then more than likely they do a little bit of something, but it really comes down to how much you absorb. I guess that has to do with all the food you take, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing with multivitamins is a lot of the ones that are kind of cheap off the shelf, they don't have the best quality of the vitamins. They're, you know, because the different chemicals make up these different vitamins, and they don't always have the most absorbable, the most, you know, easily
like soluble.
Soluble, you know, all that stuff. So there's some that have better forms of these molecules, some that have inferior forms, but it still works, just maybe not as well. But it's like, you know, that's taking you from 98% to 100%. It's not really that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Whether or not you want to take a multivitamin is, I think, for the cost, why not just do it? Because it doesn't really cost very much, but that's just my personal opinion.
I'll tell you why not to do it. Because I was taking these GNC vitamins, and they are the biggest horse pills, and I'm such a goddamn pussy listen to this story. So I was at work, right, and I'm taking this GNC vitamins that Joke recommended, and so I take it every day. Well, I'm in my office one day, right, and I only have probably a quarter cup of water. And so I pop this vitamin in, and I swallow it halfway, and I start choking on it. And so I'm the general manager of a hotel. So the last thing I want to do is go running out of the office and have everybody see I'm choking, have somebody save my life. I don't need to owe anybody shit. So I do the dumbest thing possible. I close my office door while I'm choking, and I'm trying to look around for some other kind of water. Obviously, there's no other water in my office. So I actually leaned myself over a chair in my office and started trying to give myself the Heimlich maneuver.
Oh, my God.
And thankfully, I was able to gag up this vitamin. And then I had to sit in my office because my eyes were watering so bad that it looked like I was just bawling, like I just watched The Piano. And so I sat in there for like a half hour to clear myself up. So I don't take multivitamins anymore because I'm too much of a pussy to swallow.
That makes sense. That doesn't surprise me.
Shit. So on the nutrition front, let's talk about Reds for a second, because he's been making a lot of claims lately that you've taken exception to, particularly because he has this nutritionist that also coincidentally he's buying stuff from, and it sounds a little sketchy.
No conflict of interest there at all. Of course not.
Yeah, right. So, and then, but I think that what worried me is when I was talking to him on the podcast, I mean, he's not cooking red meat, and he's drinking raw milk.
That's retarded. I mean, that is, there's a reason modern food practices are what they are. It's safer. It's sanitary. It kills the bacteria. Like, I don't know. You do what you want, Reds, but that's just, you're putting your life in your hands there. I mean, you're trusting this cow to not have some disease that they don't know about. I mean, just kill the fucking diseases that are in there. I don't know.
Yeah, it didn't make a lot of sense to me either, because when I asked him about it, he said, well, I know where the cow comes from and I know what he eats. And I'm thinking, yeah, the cow eats in a pasture filled with its own shit. And it's eating out of the ground, and
oh, man,
who knows what kind of
bacteria. I don't believe in any of that vegan shit. Well, it's not, but you know, all that natural, like it's you have to cook your food. I mean, I don't understand. There's no, you got to cook your food. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, and like the one thing I did agree with him on the podcast, because of my own personal experience, I mentioned this to you on the boards too, is I'm eating a lot less carbs and I feel a million times better. But also, I think full disclosure is, previous when I was unhealthy, I was eating way too many carbs. So I mean, that, and I was eating shitty carbs that were covered in greasy burgers and stuff like that too. So certainly that could have something to do with it. But not eating carbs melted weight off of me and made me feel much better. And while carbs should turn into energy, they just turned into lethargy for me.
Okay, well, here's the thing, so carbs can, by themselves, cause an insulin spike, which will then give you that lethargic feeling. But carbs don't turn carbs into fat. Basically, what happens is your body spends its time burning the carbs and then stores the dietary fat as fat. So the most important thing is literally your overall caloric intake. You need to burn more than you take in to lose weight. So when you stopped eating, you know, or you ate less carbs or whatever, you were just eating less calories. That's why you lost weight. If you had ate less fat and the same amount of carbs, you still would have lost weight. It doesn't matter. Your body doesn't care. It's the law of thermodynamics. Energy is there. You can't, like, manipulate it. It's calories in versus calories out, and you can't change that. As much as you would like to, as much as people think that there's these superfoods and stuff, it's all bullshit. It's calories in versus calories out, and that's all there is. You can manipulate one or you can manipulate both, but that's the only way to get to change your physique. It really is.
Well, hang on though. I gotta question you on that, because your caloric intake is not equal if you eat 500 calories worth of boneless skinless chicken versus two Mountain Dews.
Yes, it is.
It's the same thing.
It's the exact same. Well, okay, your calories in are the same thing. Your calories out are not, because it takes 25% of the calories from protein are burned in the digesting of protein, whereas with carbs, it's like 1% and fat is like nothing. So protein basically counts for only 75% of its actual caloric value. So it's like 4. It should really be like 3.2. But if you had, let's say, you know, 500 calories worth of like organic brown rice, or 500 calories worth of ice cream, and they're all the same macronutrients, your body will treat them exactly the same as far as weight loss is concerned. Exactly the same.
So
you cannot fake calories.
Why do people that look like Honey Boo Boo's mom drink Mountain Dew and not eat rice?
I have no idea what Honey Boo Boo's mom looks like.
She looks like a big, she looks like Jabba the Hutt.
Okay.
Basically, my point is, why when you see slothish people, are they eating slothish things then, if caloric intake is the same thing?
Because the slothish things don't make you feel full, so they eat more of them. They're just eating overall more calories, because the shitty stuff, you know, the quote unquote unclean foods, they just don't make you feel full, so you eat more of them, and that's all it is. The only difference between a clean food and an unclean food, I mean, is washing it, because your body treats them all the same. It's just a matter of how much you're actually taking in.
Hmm. What you're saying does make sense.
Because a calorie is a calorie. Like, it doesn't matter where that calorie comes from. I'm talking within a single macronutrient, you know, fat, protein, carbs. So it doesn't matter where that calorie comes from. I mean, I'm a relatively lean guy. I eat ice cream every single fucking night. Like, and it's because it fits into my macros. Like, I could have like some shitty organic brown rice or something, but that doesn't taste good. I'd rather have ice cream, and my body doesn't care. So why don't I just eat what I want? So it just matters that you hit your protein goal, you hit your fat goal, and then fill up the rest with carbs, as long as you're lower in calories than what your body is burning. And that's how you have sustainable weight loss.
Are you eating ice cream every night in your jammies watching reruns of Sex and the City?
Not Sex and the City. Normally I'm watching like the Indians game or something.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I'm a big ice cream my jammies fan at night.
I'm not talking because I really like ice cream too. I like Ben and Jerry's, or not Ben and Jerry's. It's Ben and Jerry's. They make a Jimmy Fallon's late night snack.
Oh yeah.
And it has salted caramel and chocolate covered potato chips in it. It is brutally bad for you. But it's like my one thing that my guilty pleasure.
Yeah, I'm a caramel fiend. Anything with caramel on it, I will just destroy it.
You should try that. You'd love it.
I don't like chocolate.
Oh.
I'm weird. I don't like chocolate. I don't like peanut butter, but I love caramel.
Yeah. All right. Well, all those things sound good. So we were speaking about Reds with the nutrition thing. So before the podcast, we were talking a little bit about the CBA. So I'm going to make a bouncy transition here into the CBA.
Oh, here we go.
So
this should be good.
Well, and the reason I want to talk about it, I mentioned to you earlier that during the Reds podcast, we got done. And then afterwards, Reds said, I can't believe you didn't grill me on the CBA. And I said, oh, shit. Oh, we got to start recording again. And we were done. And it was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I missed that opportunity. So so I want to get your side of the CBA. Now, before I do want to throw out, to Red's credit, he did talk to me about it separately and said, look, you know, I know it's not perfect and it wasn't perfect, but I want everybody to know I worked on it for 6 months diligently. And at the end of the day, all I'm trying to do is improve the game. But I probably shouldn't have listened to the input of every asshole that had an opinion. So, and with that, I give him a lot of credit because he was trying to improve some basic flaws that we had in the game. And you've been around long enough to know that we were it used to be that we would just judge everything by age and salary, and
that was the best.
Yeah, was it though? Because I mean, that was far more unrealistic than what we have now.
Okay, so here's my opinion. I quit for like 5 years, so I only know old game, which was, you know, you're basing stuff off of age, salary, distribution, and general feel. You know, that was old game. And then when I came back, it was after CBA 2, and it was, you know, you're getting paid now off of performance. Now you're getting, you know, now you can scout other teams' rosters. I mean, no one had FOA back in the day, yeah, back in old game. So it was, I came back to a very different game, which is fine. You know, I've adjusted and done fine. But my issue with the CBA is you're basically – salaries are getting higher and higher and higher and higher, and it's not going to ever stop because of the way that it's done. So old game, you were paying people based on what they were expected to perform, because you were paying them based on ratings, and in CSFBL, ratings are all. So you were paying them based on how they were expected to perform, because you were paying them based on their current ratings, and maybe there's some potentials in there. But you basically knew what you were getting. Here, you're paying people based on ratings, and then when they play good because they have good ratings, you pay them more. And then they still have those good ratings, and they play well again. Well, they're paying more now because it's a percentage of salary. So it just keeps getting fucking higher and higher and higher, and then I have to sell off all my guys every offseason. It pisses me the fuck off. So, and because you pay them based on potential too. So you pay them before they're good. You pay them even more when they're good. And then you're still paying them even when their ratings have started to decline and they're not good anymore. So, like, cut me a fucking break. Give me some cheap players once in a while.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is my argument back whenever I have this conversation about the CBA. what's it even matter? As long as everybody's in the same field, we're all playing under the same rules, what's it matter?
Well, because honestly, it just sucks for me because when I assemble a team of really fucking good guys, I have to continually sell them off because they get more and more and more expensive. So for like the guys who suck at the game, it doesn't matter because their teams are always going to be shit. But when you're trying to hold together a team of superstars, you can't do it because they get too expensive. And it's annoying because I'm tired of selling all my guys.
Yeah, that actually has happened to me in most of my leagues because one of the things that I did get really good at was assembling a team that was very similar in age and then and get everybody all lined up so I could take 6, 7, 8 runs at it where these guys were, you know, right before, during, or right after their prime.
But you can't anymore because they get too expensive after 2 years. You got to sell them off.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, but at the end of the day, it's just a, you know, it's just a different way of playing. And I don't know. I mean, but my argument is, like, before, when you were in the game wasn't, it had a lot of reasons that it wasn't realistic. It's no different now. It's just different unrealism.
I agree that it's different unrealism. I like being able to scout other teams' players. I like being able to scout people in the draft. I think that's, you know, that's good. Give people as much information as they need to build their team. I just find it annoying that, you know, you get a guy who makes too much money, you know, based on his, I have a guy making $6.5 million in TDD, and his best, he's 3 years into his career, his best OPS is like 905. Like, he's making $6.5 million. He's a fucking right fielder. Why are you paying? Why is he worth that much? He's 27 years old. I mean, he's a great player because right now he's putting up like 950. So God only knows what he's gonna make next year. But he shouldn't have been making $6.5 million after putting up one season in his career of over 900 OPS. That's not a $6 million player. And it's just, you know, and because of that, I had to sell, you know, my number two starter. Granted, I got a good return, but, you know, if anyone ever figured out that just don't buy my players, I'd be fucked. I'd be completely fucked. But I've done okay with you know, selling vets. I mean, they're good players, but I just basically don't sell my irreplaceable guys.
You know this is going out over the internet, right? So you just gave away your secret. Yeah, it's too late now.
It's all good.
No, I'm just kidding. But so, speaking of TDD, did you get the same team back that you originally had?
No, I actually took over Mac's team. Mac hadn't really been paying attention to it, which is fine. I mean, the league wasn't much while I was gone. So I took over Mac's team. They had some good pieces. They had a great pitcher, some decent guys, and some good defensive players. So basically, you know, turned it around and sold off a couple of guys, but used his defensive guys to make my pitchers look good, sold all my pitchers for ridiculous amounts of guys, and I don't know, I've won like 10 straight division championships and only got a couple World Series out of it, though.
That $7 million guy you got is named John Doe.
No, he's not the guy I hate because he's actually worth it.
Is that guy a rename? He must be a rename, right?
Yeah, he was a rename. I traded for him. I needed a big bat.
That guy is a big bat.
Well, Beers Morgan is the guy who pisses me off.
Beers Morgan, that's awesome.
That's like my friend group's nickname for my best friend from high school. So my best friend from high school is a big-time conservative, and his name's Morgan. So we like started calling him Piers Morgan to piss him off, and we also like to drink a lot, so then we just started calling him Beers Morgan.
Yeah, that's a good name.
So I decided that, you know, Beers Morgan is appropriate name for some piece of shit overpaid guy.
Captain Beers Morgan.
Captain Beers Morgan.
Yeah, that's good. So, yeah, actually, on a side note, speaking of alcohol, one thing that you and I have in common is you're a big fan of Heineken and Jaeger Bombs.
I do like Jaeger Bombs. I haven't drank, oh my God, I haven't drank a Heineken since college, I want to say.
Yeah, Heineken used to be my beer. I used to, that was my jam. Every single night I'd drink Heineken.
Heineken's all right. I haven't had it in a really long time,
man,
to be honest with you.
I want to pour one over my head right now, but I don't drink anymore. So as long as I keep my mouth tight, I can just pour it all over my face.
I don't know how enjoyable that would be for you.
I don't know.
Go for it.
So any idea who on this conversation besides yourself was an original member of the Dirty Dozens?
I know you were. Do you want to come back?
Did you know that I was? I didn't know if you'd remember that or not.
I knew you were in it. I don't know if I remembered that you were an original member.
I was.
You know who won the first World Series in the Dirty Dozens?
Not me.
PR.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, that pisses me off.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, well, and usually when his teams get good, it's because he trades like an animal, and once he stops trading, he usually starts winning. But it's like he gets in the way of his own success sometimes, and he just trades himself into oblivion.
Well, he was winning a lot in LEG before I got there. And then like one or two seasons into my tenure, he literally traded everyone for like the number one and number two picks and just gutted the team and then left the league. And then we put some shitty ass guy, we voted in Combo, who doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. And that team is just completely fucked. That team is so fucked. He ripped his team apart to shit and then left. I was like, all right, well, someone else can fix it.
Oh, that is not good for him.
No. So it's not.
So you're in the Dirty Dozens leg, and where else are you?
That's it.
Well, you picked two pretty good leagues. Not the best league, but two pretty good leagues.
I like the Dirty Dozens, man. We've done some good things there, and I like LEG too. Some of the recent owner additions haven't really been up to snuff, but who knows? They like having people wait, go on the wait list and then vote in. I figure out what owners I want for Dirty Dozens, and I just say, hey, join us.
How did a cocky bastard like you get into a league of an extraordinary gentleman?
Listen, I'm a gentleman and a scholar, my friend.
Oh, all right. So the Dirty Dozens, I looked it up this morning. That you started that league February 1st of 2006.
It's been going for a while.
That's incredible, huh? Over 8 years ago.
Over 8 years. I've been gone for more than half of that, I think.
I mean, and you think of who you were and where you were then. Oh. I mean, that's a big part of your life.
I know. I was a piece of shit high schooler back then. I mean, I was a dickhead. Like even on the forums and stuff, I was a complete asshole for no reason, just because I was, an insecure high schooler who wanted to be a tough guy. I was retarded.
Yeah, actually, one of the big things speaking of being an asshole, but we all backed you up on this, was you got kicked out of Remake. That was a huge controversy.
That was fucking ridiculous.
And that happened in June of 2006. So, I mean, just 4 months after the Dirty Dozen started. But walk me through exactly what happened, because I remember Realm Walker, who I personally consider to be a total piece of shit, being a central part of this. And one more caveat before you tell the story, or sidebar. You have to be a huge piece of shit if a guy like me, Zubaz, Tino, D-Man, Clone, a whole bunch of people that didn't get along at the time all collectively thought you were a complete... Even smart Benny wanted that guy gone.
Oh, Benny loves everyone, but Benny hates him.
Yep. So tell me the story about what happened.
All right, so trying to remember. So I was in Remake and I was kicking all their asses. And I mean, I literally like turned this piece of shit team around in 2 years and started just winning titles, and they were, whatever. And I was an asshole at the time, so they weren't exactly thrilled about it. And I think on like the TDD forums, I cursed or something. And like I'd gotten a warning or a strike in Remake. And, like, Remake is all about procedures and following the law and following the letter of the law. Well, Mertz decided to, like, give me a warning that said if I ever cursed anywhere, he would kick me out of Remake. And, like, no one really said anything at the time. And I was like, yeah, whatever, okay. But he never had the authority to do that. I mean, they have a strike system for a reason. So I cursed in TDD. And he, like, kicked me out of – well, he tried to – he kicked me out of Remake. And – a lot of people were like, what, you can't fucking do this. You can't just unilaterally kick someone out of the league. And, there's a whole to do about it. I remember like Piggy and Wolf were ready to leave with me. I was like, no, don't do that. But yeah, it was just, they kicked me out because I got cursed in TDD or something. It was fucking stupid.
Yeah, so Mertz post. Wow, this is brutal. So I hadn't read it before just now, but he puts a whole bunch of procedures up and whatever and talks about your first warning. But then he says, Tino's swearing, while not part of the remake boards, but this rule plainly states owners cannot use offensive language on the CSFBL forums at any time. Any problems with this, you can PM me or email me, blah, blah, blah. So he, at the time, unilaterally kicked you out of the league, and then this whole thing blew up, right? And then Realm backed him up?
I honestly, I don't really remember Realm's involvement in it. I'm sure Realm backed him up because Realm hated me, but I don't know how much Realm had to do with me getting kicked out. I'm sure he was probably involved in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, you'll have to go back to the remake threads. It's page 93 and 94.
Page 93.
But let me just give you an idea of these. I'm going to list off just the threads that Realm Walker closed in the 2 days of June 8th, 7th, 8th, and 9th.
Oh, God.
He closed one that he started called This Is Pathetic, one that you started called Hey Mertz, Just a Question. Then he locked all posts on impeachment and Tino's removal will be locked.
Oh, God, then I wanted to have him impeached.
Yep. And
I forgot all about that.
And then he locked one called It All Boils Down To from Mariners. Impeachment process started. Tino removed from the league. Impeachment process has not started. And then Big Steve or Stiv, Tino should be considered for a reinstatement. All those threads were locked by Realm Walker in 3 days.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that was quite a blow up.
That was a huge blow up. He wanted me out. So, I mean, if there was people making arguments for me, he was locking that shit. So it is what it is.
And then, so on the TDD boards, the Smart Benny started a, what, this is the part of it that I remember. Smart Benny started a drive to unite people on your side. With a thread called We Gotta Stick Up for Our Commish. And basically laid out what happened. And then that thread got put over to TCL. And that's where the famous line came from, that TD Pats, you remember him? TD Patriots?
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
He said, he was the one that coined the phrase, Tino may be a prick, but he's our prick. And so that was the mantra back then.
Oh, I love it. TD Pats is good. He was good. I love TD Pats. I think we battled back and forth sometimes, but...
Yep.
No, TD Pats was cool. TD Penny was the guy who
or maybe it was TD Penny that said it. I might be wrong on that.
There was two. There was TD Pats and then TD Penny, I think. I don't know. Man, we're talking like 8 real life years at this.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. At the time, though, that was early enough in CSFBL where that was a huge controversy. Like on the TDD boards, when I was reading it this morning, Brian actually came in and started posting to try and calm things down because it was so out of hand.
I get people riled up sometimes.
You do it. What do you think makes you that controversial figure, or at least used to?
Yeah, I would say less so now, but I mean back then I was very polarizing. People either loved me or hated me. And there's definitely people on both sides, probably more on the latter.
But to hate you.
What? You used to hate me? That's okay. I didn't like
you. No. I said people love to hate you. Not love or hate.
Oh, well, yeah, they did love to hate me.
Yeah.
But I deserved it. I mean, I was an ass. I really was. You know, I started shit for no reason just because I was, you know, 17, and that's what stupid 17-year-olds do.
I started shit too, and I was a stupid 30-year-old. So I can't say anything because
at least I've matured since then.
Yeah, no, I haven't. No, at least I sobered up since then, but I haven't matured any. But That was back, you know, because I would try and pick fights with you too, just because it was fun to. Well, we didn't really fight; we bantered more than anything. But that's where
I think we had some fight. You were. I think you were pretty good at getting under my skin, rustling my jimmies.
Yeah,
I think you were.
It was because
we had some battles.
It was because the first time that we got into it is I was giving you a hard time for putting electrical tape under your eyes. Why do you do that? That's gross.
I just love electrical tape, dude.
So
love it.
Obviously it was eye black, but the funny thing is that you tried to justify to me that it was eye black, like you were taking it seriously. I think that's where we started going down a different road.
Yeah. I mean, I was very easy to bait back then.
Yeah.
Very easy to bait. I've since mellowed out a little bit.
Yeah, you have mellowed out to just. But I think it's because you have more of an outlet now. Obviously, you're working out more. You're doing rugby.
Oh, that's true.
You're eating better. Plus, you put a lot of time and effort into work.
Yeah, that's. I mean, there's a lot of different things that I'm doing now that are good. And it's funny that you mentioned I have an outlet now, because when I went down to college, first semester of my freshman year, I was like the angriest drunk of all time. I was just a walking disaster.
You wanted to fight?
I wanted to fight everyone when I would get hammered. And then I started playing rugby and, like, just beat the shit out of people on the field, and I was no longer an angry drunk. I was just happy-go-lucky.
Yeah, that's good.
I just need an outlet.
There's nothing worse than an angry drunk. Nobody wants to hang out with
you. Now I see those people, and I'm like, what the fuck are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Like, stop it.
So your name on the forums is Tino124. Where did the 124 come from?
I wanted to be Tino24, and it was taken. Because Tino Martinez's number when he was on the Yankees was 24.
There was already a Tino 24 on CSFBL?
Yeah. No. But that was like my AOL screen name. So I just wanted to keep it consistent.
Do you know you still have an OKCupid profile up?
Do I really?
Yeah. That's how I found out you liked Heineken. Because I typed your name into Google and it was like the third thing. It was Tino's OKCupid profile.
Wow, I did that years ago when I first moved out here.
Yeah. I responded.
Did you send me something?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
I'm trying to think if I actually ever even met some girls off of there or anything.
You came off pretty cocky. My guess is no.
No, I'm sure I did then.
You said my under interests, you said World of Warcraft.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was just being a dick on that.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if I actually ever... I don't think I did. I don't know. I wasn't actually trying to, like, meet anyone. I was just trying to, you know, find some random hookups on occasion sort of thing.
Yeah,
but I'm a taken man now. I can't believe that's still up. Gotta get rid of that.
How long have you... Yeah, you don't want your girlfriend to see it.
I mean, I haven't been on it in 2 years, I want to say.
How long have you been dating the girl you're with now?
6 months or so.
Oh, okay. All right. I was going to ask you something else about that. I have to go back for a second to the Dirty Dozens.
Because
I remember when you first started that league, one of your goals was to take down TCL or surpass TCL in some way. And I remember you saying that you had a secret weapon and it was Dark Wolf. Do you remember that?
No.
You see, he was your secret weapon owner and you just thought very highly of him. Do you remember?
Well, I know I always thought very highly of Wolf. I thought he was a great owner. I had him back in TDD for like a week, and then he was like, I can't do two teams. Sorry.
Yeah.
So he's a piece of shit now. But
well, he's a lawyer now.
Well, that explains why he can't do two teams.
Yep.
But yeah, I loved competing against Wolf. He was a good dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I was just trying to have more active league than you was what it was. I just wanted to have, you know, the most active league in CSFBL.
But then you joined TCL right around the same time.
Yeah, but I mean, TCL was like my side chick.
Oh, yeah.
You know, TDD was my love and TCL was like my side chick. And then I got kicked out, I think, for doing stupid stuff.
TCL was like the fat girl you call when you don't have any
options. There's no fat girls.
Are you sure?
I'm sure. Oh. I'm positive.
All right. So, yeah, when you were with TCL, your side chick was the Gotham City Swamp Things.
Oh, that team was frustrating.
Yeah, I'll tell you why that team was frustrating, because you owned it from the 1985 season to the 1991 season. All of the six seasons, I think five of them you had winning seasons. Three of them you went to the playoffs, lost in the first round every time.
Ah,
But
no.
the piece of history you probably don't realize is that team won a division the year before you took over
The year after.
and the year after, and it went to the World Series and won.
Oh, that makes sense. No, that team, I remember that team. I got a whole bunch of young stud hitters and couldn't find any pitching. And I just never had the pitching to go anywhere. And just I think I at the time it's probably been surpassed. I think I set the record for most runs scored in a season or something. And just then got crushed in the and got shut down completely in the division series that year. I was really upset about it.
Yeah, I looked at a couple of those teams because I hadn't looked at them in a long time, and I couldn't recognize one name of any of your pitchers. Like
Yeah.
you had a brutal staff, but you did have Nigel
Nigel
Greco.
Greco.
Yeah, you remember
Nigel
him?
Greco. I remember him. I remember I traded like high pick number four, I think, for Greco. And you guys all thought I was retarded because he hadn't done anything.
He was
But,
good.
well, not when I traded for him. When I traded for him, he hadn't put up a OPS over 750 or something. And, but he was like 23, making 3+ million, DIBASL. And I thought this guy was going to be a stud. And then, so I gave up the number four or whatever for him. And, as soon as I did it, he came out and just crushed it.
Yeah, because I think he was right around a 900 OPS guy the whole time he was there.
He was very good.
Yeah. And then the only other guy that I really knew much about from your team was a guy named Stephen Burge. You remember him?
Burge. Yeah, the name sounds familiar. Was he a catcher?
I know he was a hitter. I don't know what position
Okay.
he played, but yeah, he was a pretty good team too, or a pretty good player too.
I had a number of good hitters. I just never had the pitching.
Yeah.
Dude, I just got fucking swept. Well, no, not swept. I lost 3 out of 4 to the worst team in my division, and I'm on pace to win 120 games. Are you fucking kidding me?
Is that just happened
GDP.
now?
Yeah, well, like the overnight Sims and then the 12. I lost by one run, one run, one run, and then won by 12.
We
That
have
makes sense.
this is the first time on the podcast we have breaking news.
Yeah, well, I just won 14-2 after losing 3 straight one run games, which pisses me off.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I have it here starred. I want to talk about my friend and yours, Boise.
Oh, God.
So you had mentioned it even before the podcast. I could tell that you were heated about it because I've been on record that Boise might not be the greatest owner of all time. He's a used car salesman, he's and I understand in the Dirty Dozens that he is wiping the goddamn floor with you.
I give you a little bit and you just take it so far.
Just to an
All right.
embarrassing level, yeah. Tell me about
All
him.
right. So here's what happened. He joined in, I want to say 2050 TDD time. I won the World Series in 2050. I won it in 2051. Then the fucking engine tweak happened and just obliterated my pitching staff. I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden offense exploded through the roofs. Singles, doubles, triples were up, home runs were down, but overall runs went through the roof, wrecked my staff. He came in, picked up a whole bunch of hitters, and beat me in the LCS in 2052. And he had a great team 2052. 2053, he also had a great team, beat me in the LCS again. 2054, I've continued to improve. We're about equal. He beats me 2054. 2055, I have the better team. And I'm up 3-1. I go on vacation. I come back. Dude fucking comes back from down 3-1, wins, a couple ninth inning games, like game 6 and game 7. I'm just like, fuck this. So this season, I don't know. I'm on pace to win like 110 games. He'll be in the playoffs too. I'm hoping I can get one from him. But he actually, after beating me in the LCS, he only won 2 of the 4 World Series that he went to. He got unlucky and lost to 2 shitty teams, and he really should have 4 straight.
Oh, man. You know, well, I'm looking at that 2055 playoff series. You were up 3-1.
I don't want to talk about it. That one hurt, man.
And then
that
the last two games were one-run games.
Oh, man, ooh, that one hurt. Yeah. That one made me want to not play CSFBL anymore. That series comeback. Just give me one. I mean, I had better team. I was ready to fucking go. I picked up one of the best pitchers and just was not to be, I guess.
That Tony Almeida division, though, has been racking it up. Three or six straight World Series. You won two, and then he's gone to the last four.
Well, he's not Almeida. He's Bauer. So.
Oh, I thought he was Philly.
He is Philly. Philly's in Bauer.
Oh, he's in Bauer. I'm sorry. Yeah. I see it. Yeah, so he was beating you in the league championship series, not the division series.
Yeah, he was beating me in the league. I've won, I don't know, nine straight divisions, I think.
Got it.
But out of those nine, I've only gone to two World Series. And I won them both, but my team hates the LCS.
What is with these division names? What's that have to do with the Dirty Dozens besides Telly Savalas?
I think I just kind of came up. So at the time, I was big into 24.
Yeah.
I came up with the league name because the Dirty Dozen was a movie that I had just seen or something. And I was like, oh, well, that's a great league name, the Dirty Dozens, because 24 guys.
Yep.
And then because I was big into 24, it was Bauer and Almeida. And I don't know where Drebin came from. And Savalas was because he was in the Dirty Dozens.
Frank Drebin's the guy from Naked Gun.
Yeah, no, I know who he is. I don't know why we chose him, though.
Oh, yeah, all right.
That part is a surprise to me. I don't know where that came from. I used to have what is now Pimp's team. And you had asked earlier if I got my team back. No, I got Mac's team. And then my team ended up coming open, so I left in, 1999, I think. Mm-hmm. No. I left in 2001. So I leave in 2001, and I had already won three World Series, and I hadn't been back, but I had built a monster. So I left in 2001. Then I leave. Greg Gills comes in, wins the World Series in 2002, 2004, 5, 6, 7, and 8 with the exact team I built. So I don't get credit for six World Series that were the exact team I built. And so I'm a little pissed about that, but...
Oh, and now Pimp has that team. I see. Wow, yeah, that's a huge run here.
I know. But I built the team and I lost. And then that's when the sims stopped working. Like, we would get like a sim a day. And I was just done. I couldn't do it anymore. So I built the team. I left and Greggles got all my damn World Series.
Yeah, that was a frustrating time for CSFBL. I think I wonder in retrospect how much damage that did to the user base of the game, because a lot of people left just because we were getting one sim, two sims, three sims a day max.
I know,
and it went on for months.
It did. I guess if I had thought there was like an end in sight, I probably wouldn't have quit. But Brian wasn't around. He was only around to fix the sim. There was no actual fix. You know what I mean? He would patch it for a minute, and then it would fail the next sim.
Yeah.
So that was why I left. And with college and stuff, I didn't really have the same amount of time that I used to. Or not that I didn't have the same amount of time, but that I was playing rugby. I'd rather spend the time with my friends than the fantasy baseball. But yeah, that was why I left, was because the sims kept failing, and I think I was also in what was the other league? League of Legends, and I had a couple brutal LCS losses, and I was winning 115 games and then losing the LCS, and I was just like, all right, enough of this.
That actually seems to happen an unusual amount in all leagues.
I know
that those 110 plus win teams lose in the first round all the time. It kind of makes me wonder about some of the playoff ratings.
I'm still a believer that the ratings you see are what they are.
You don't believe there's a clutch rating?
I don't know. You do? You think so?
Yeah.
I really don't know. There's a couple. I don't know. That's one of
the
things.
You know why I think so? Is if you look at why in the world would there be a close and late stat if there wasn't something tied to it? But then if you look at it, there are people with just obscene differences in their stats over a long period of time and close.
No, no, there's a reason for that.
Okay.
Because pitchers fatigue and get worse, and batters don't. So the close and late, you're playing against pitchers who are 70-80% of their max ratings, but batters are still at their max ratings. So of course hitters are going to fucking kill it close and late. I think that stat's useless. It's basically showing pitchers fatigue, batters don't.
Yeah, I can appreciate that because, you know, also it's very clear that, you know, the most runs are scored in the first inning, and that's because you have your lineup set in the first inning. But why have that stat?
I think it's just for fun. Until someone tells me otherwise, I really think that's just kind of something fun to look at. Because it in my opinion, it makes sense that, you know, batters are going to be better close and late because they are playing at 100% and pitchers are playing at 70-80% of their ratings. And that is a huge difference when you take a guy from, you know, 80 FI to 60. That's huge. I mean, he goes from being good to T-ball, just crush me. That's why I think you see almost every batter will be higher close and late than not.
So,
I don't even look at it.
Do you think CFAT affects batters? So
no.
when they get below 80%, are they being affected?
No, they don't get hit until they're below 50.
Yeah.
Or at least that's
how it used to be. I don't know if
that's
true.
How it always, I mean, that's what the help pages say, and granted that's not gospel.
Yeah.
But there hasn't been anything that says that CFAT affects batters.
You know
or
what?
I haven't seen it.
I am going to work diligently, and I know this might be a fruitless effort. I'm going to try and get Brian to come on this podcast. That is going to be the first question I'm going to ask him is clutch rating. Admit it.
Oh, well, I mean, if you get Brian on, I have a list of questions for that guy.
Yeah.
I have a list. I would love to talk to him about, you know, a lot of different stuff. The clutch rating, I would have to think. I don't have him off the top of my head, but I know there's a lot of questions that I've been wanting to ask him. You know, does CFAT affect batters is another good one. And I'll think of more.
You think more and send them to me because...
I'd love to.
I am on this kick now where I'm like, you know, if I'm going to do this podcast, I want to talk to people that I think, you know, people will find interesting.
Yeah.
And so right before I talk to you, the podcast that's about to come out, and I can say it now because it's...
because it won't come out until
after this
one does anyway.
Yeah, is Schnuggelheimer. I got him
come
on.
You got him?
Uh-huh.
Very interesting.
And so I came on. He talked about schnugging TCL. He talked a lot about Pennant Wars. He talked about Nolan's fights with Brian. It's pretty good stuff, so I think people will like hearing from him.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Another thing I would want to probably ask Brian about is stadium settings. Like, what do the stadium settings do?
Yeah, especially for right and left field, does it matter? And
yeah, does it matter? You know, why are so many more balls hit to left field than right field?
Are they?
Yeah. You didn't know that?
Well, I mean, I guess I can see it in the range portion, but...
Always put your higher, you know, your better field or higher range guy in left field just because he'll get more chances.
Just because he right-handed batters pull more balls? Is that...
Maybe.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know.
I mean, it is definitely true because the shortstop gets more attempts than the second baseman, too.
And I wonder if I'm fucking myself. I'm just thinking about this right now. I have my TDD team is almost all right-handers. I have one lefty. And I have a huge left field line because I have a 99 range left fielder who I want to take advantage of that.
Oh, but you're hurting yourself on
but
the
I
offense.
But I wonder if I'm killing myself on not letting my right-handers hit home runs. Just thought.
You know what, though? That's the funny thing that you mentioned that, because the line that I've heard since the very beginning is that how you set the right and left field fence doesn't matter because it aggregates it as an average. And I always thought that was bullshit, but I don't know.
Is that what it is?
Well, that's what I – who knows? Absolutely.
Because then I'm fucking myself because I don't have the best right fielder. I mean, he's like a 70 range guy. Maybe I should keep it a little more chill then.
I wouldn't listen to me, though. I know nothing about the game. I'm a moron.
I probably should have learned that a long time ago.
Yeah. So I have one last question for you.
Sure.
Most important question I'm going to ask you all day.
All right.
Tino, how is your sister?
She is wonderful, dude.
Do you really have a sister?
No, I don't have a sister.
Oh, I always thought that you didn't actually have a sister, but I wasn't sure.
I don't have a sister, but if I did, I'm sure she would want to meet you. What a respectable gentleman.
I am a respectful gentleman. I don't know why I'm not in leg.
Hey, don't join leg. Join Dirty Dozens.
So how did the Tino sister thing start?
I think PR.
That sounds right.
At Tino's sister. I know it was him, and started a Tino's sister account, and I guess that was that. I don't really know like there was obviously something before it. He didn't just start a Tino's sister account for no reason, but I don't know what it was before it that caused that.
That's really funny because that's like one of the most common recurring themes in CSFBL history is making fun of your sister.
She's a saint. Like, yeah, why would
she is a saint. I don't know. And she's grown into such a beautiful woman.
She's a great woman. She really is. Knockout. Easy now.
Yeah, that's my sister. Calm down. All right. So we are at like an hour 20. God, it's flown by.
Absolutely has.
So I always like to give people the opportunity to get anything out that you want to get out, say hi to somebody, put somebody on blast, whatever you might want to do, anything you want to clear up, whatever it may be. You got anything for us?
Well, anyone who's looking for a new league, I'd recommend you check out Dirty Dozens. Got to get my spiel out there. Other than that, I've really enjoyed talking to you, Zubaz. And I would kind of want to join TCL at one point, but you guys have a hard cap. And given the CBA, I don't think I could ever do a hard cap. I got teams. My teams are like $10 million over the soft cap, all of them, always. So, anyway, maybe I'll play with you guys someday.
Yeah, the hard cap really cramped my style because my whole thing, and when I won like 8 World Series in the matter of like 40 seasons, and the way that I was doing it is I was building that team and then just allowing their salary to skyrocket. I mean, I had teams that had $84 million salaries because I was just really good at manipulating the soft cap. And now with the hard cap, man, I'm getting to the playoffs pretty consistently, but this year I'm going to be a 57-win team. Like, I just couldn't compete.
Yeah. My LEG team is going to be absolutely out of control next year. I'm at 68 million. I'm at 69 million almost. And of that, I have 21 million in my low minors. Those guys are going to explode. I mean, my team's decent. They're playing over their heads right now. I got, I don't know, 573 winning percentage. But I have a bunch of really freaking good dudes coming up soon. So, granted, I sucked for like 4 years.
Actually, let me ask you about that before I let you go, because there's a lot of talk in many leagues about tanking.
There was that. We did have that little conversation, and I think it was spilled over into TCL.
Yeah, well, and it's been a conversation at TCL for quite a while. What is your take on tanking in CSFBL specifically?
Well, all right, so tanking is deliberately losing games to get a higher draft pick. That is my definition of tanking. And it's one of those things where you'll know it when you see it. So I got called out by Rent or Pimp or something. I think Pimp was just saying it to start shit, and Rent was the one calling me out. But, you know, there's tanking when you're leaving guys down who are better than what you have up. And because there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of different people ask, should I bring this guy up? And I almost always say, no, leave him down. And I judge it based on one of three things. If I'm going to the playoffs, leave him down, play him in the playoffs, and then bring him up next year. If he's better than what you have on your active roster. If he could make the difference between playoffs and not, bring him up and play him. if you're not making the playoffs anyway, and he needs additional development, well, don't hamstring yourself just to, you know, don't take the FOA hit to win one or two games and hamstring his development because you think you're tanking if you don't win another game by bringing this guy who's barely better than what you have on your active roster up. And, you know, people who say, oh, you always have to play your best players. Well, if it's going to cost you down the line, then you're actually winning less. So I don't think that's tanking, leaving someone down to let him develop if you're not going to make the playoffs. Even if he's currently better than what you have on active, you know, I've got a guy right now who I just brought up in LEG, and he's like 95 DI, 80 contact, 75 batting, 75 slugging. But he, you know, he's like 70 batting out of 83. He's 72 slugging out of 97, and he's 25. So I was leaving him down, even though he's got the 95 DI, because he's still got 25 points to go in slugging. And, you know, now I brought him up because the playoff race is getting a little tighter, and I'm like, all right, well, if I take the FOA hit, that's not the end of the world. I can cut someone else, because I was making the playoffs anyway. But now it's getting tighter, and I want to have him up there. But like a guy like that, even I think that it's more important to have him develop, just given the way the CBA is and how expensive guys get when they come up. I'd rather have him develop and delay that FOA hit as long as possible. If he's only going to be marginally better than what you already have, I'd rather leave him down, let him develop, delay the FOA hit. You're setting your team up better long term. And, you know, I have my team in TDD that's on pace to win 115 games or whatever. I have a guy in low minors who is better than what I have on my active roster. I got a third baseman down there with, you know, 90 batting and 85 range or something. He's better than my third baseman. But he's making twice as much as my third baseman is. So I'm not going to bring him up. I'm saving him for the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not a rule in TDD about bringing guys up in the playoffs that you didn't play during the year?
Well, no, there's not. There's not. And as long as you're not abusing the pitcher fatigue bug, yeah. I don't, you know, that I would have a problem with. I mean, I got guys in TDD who had 3 years of playoff experience before I put them on my active roster, just because I was easily winning the division. They were overpaid. They were not completely developed. And I was just using them for the playoffs.
Yep. Yep.
So that's my philosophy on tanking. You know it when you see it. It's deliberately losing games, but maximizing your overall wins by letting guys develop and by manipulating your allocations, I don't consider that tanking at all.
I would tend to agree with you. All right. Well, great talk. Thanks for the time that you took to do this. Hang on the line here for a second. Anything else for the public?
No, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, man, for having me.
All right, thank you. And I want to apologize to everyone listening for ruining your fantasies about Tino's sister. You can make her whatever you want in your mind.
That's the best way to do it.
That's the best way to do it. Until next time, we are out of here. As the years go by, I'm back in the game at 25. Boise's hard to beat, walking on me with his playoff streak, yeah. Electric tape roll, animal print pants out of control. In Cleveland, with Mr. Afro, I play Afrojack, it's time to glow. Yeah, worked out. Yeah, worked out. When I walk on the pitch, this is what I see. Everybody drops and is staring at me. I got fashion and a tan, and I ain't afraid to show it. Show it, show it, show it. I'm Tino and I know it. I'm Tino and I know it.